The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $1,500. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
1 hour down, one more to go here on Sports Talk 1240 AM every Sunday from 8 to 10. Got the full three-headed monster here today. Unkwa Sonye, Raymond Mora, Derek Wasiak. We'll have Mel Proctor, longtime MLB announcer, join us in just a few minutes. You had all football during hour one. It's going to be all baseball now. And we'll start with the fact that the Yankees beat one of the best pitchers in baseball today. Final 6-4 over Chris Archer and the Tampa Bay Rays. And they still managed to lurk behind Toronto in that AL East. And I remember in the beginning of the season, everyone said, oh, the AL East is weak. You know, it's not what it was going to be. Like, it's not going to be a resurgence of the mid-2000s where everyone's in it. Yes, everyone's not in it, but two of the best teams in baseball still playing that division. But Toronto, they're rolling. They're the freight train that can't be stopped right now. And the Yankees, we will know that because the Jays come to the stadium this week. We'll know if the Yankees have enough in the tank, especially with Teixeira being out for the next couple weeks. Do they have enough to knock off Toronto, or at the very least, keep up?
Well, I mean, Yankees have been slowed down by injuries, and they've been slowed down by fatigue. You know, A-Rod last month had like a dreadful month. He was batting, I think, 130 or 110 around there, and he couldn't hit anything at all. And he had that grand slam, but that was after his birthday. He just slumped it down. Like, he's showing age like father time and stuff. And the Teixeira injury really hurt the lineup. And, you know, Greg Bird is a good player. You know, he's going to be a good prospect in the years to come. And he's actually surprised me, to be honest, Greg Bird, what he can do. He's been known as being a good hitter, not a good, great defense, but, you know, he's been a good hitter. But it's going to be depending on the pitching for them, because the starting pitching has to be good for them, especially against the Blue Jays. They got the bullpen, but they need the starting pitching to get them there. So we'll see what happens from there. And as far as you can say, George Arroyo managing the whole team, he's done a pretty good job. You can't really go against him on what he's trying to do, because his pitchers just have been inconsistent. His bullpen has pretty much been fatigued as well. So we'll see what happens from there.
I think the funniest thing about Joe Girardi throughout his entire tenure in the Bronx, he could have won Manager of the Year at least twice.
He could have. Right?
Because when we look at the last two seasons of Yankee baseball, they finished over 500 with half of a team. Right. Last year they couldn't hit. The year before that, pitching was a problem for them as well. The bullpen's always been a pretty strong point for the Yankees, but I will never understand how he continues not to get his credit, particularly since they're still in it.
It's because they're the Yankees. You know, they believe the Yankees are always going to be there no matter what. No matter what manager they're there, they're always going to have the credit. Oh, they have the players and how much they pay for them, all that stuff. It's just because the Yankees are not going to get any manager.
They always spend enough to give themselves a shot.
Yeah.
You know, now they did not spend the Dodgers. But, you know, despite guys like Ellsbury was injured a lot, hasn't done much this year. So for his money, he's underachieved. The kid Drew's hit somewhat recently, but
he just surprised me.
He's a failure for most of the season.
He's finally hitting over the Mendoza line.
He's banging. As
much as McCann underachieved last year, Brian McCann this year,
playing better.
He might be, from start to this point, the most consistent Yankee hitter in that lineup.
An MVP of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, he's been great. Gardner was better in the first half, all-star caliber. He deserved it, but since the all-star break, I don't know what his numbers are, but Gardner hasn't had the effect you would expect. And today was nice to see. I turned on the game just in time to see the three-run shot by McCann.
Yeah.
And then, you know, A-Rod following it with the go-ahead home run.
Yeah.
And there you go. And as far as the young guys, I like some of the stuff Bird's done. And I like Cerevino. I like the way he's pitched. And I'm kind of hoping that the Yankees put him in the postseason rotation if they make it. Because I'd like to see him finish up these last 3 weeks or so the same way he's been going about his last few starts. He looks good.
But
I like
how
him.
Gutsy has he been?
Yeah.
And the best part about him is that, yes, the Yankees, out of all baseball, their starters average the least amount of innings pitched per nine innings. But to have a Severino who can come out and give you a quality stop worth before you turn it over to a pretty solid bullpen, that's a huge shot in the arm. and they haven't treated him with the kid gloves like some of the other organizations have done with their pitchers. And we will talk Matt Harvey. Do not worry.
Oh, yeah, we will. Don't worry.
Especially around 9:30. But it's nice to see that the Yankees are saying, you know what? You've got an arm. You've gone through the minors. Go pitch. Now, they take care of him, of course. I don't think he's pitched more than 6 2/3 of an inning. But they're still freeing him up so that he can actually pitch instead of just doing the whole counting thing with either pitch counts or innings limits or whatever.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, Cervino has been like pretty much a poised pitcher if you think about it. Like, I mean, when I saw him the first time pitch, and I was in Yankee Stadium with my girl at the time, it was very, very interesting because, you know, we were sitting in the back, but I saw him pitching, and I've said it before, I was pretty much shocked at how he pitched. Now, he did lose the game, but you can't give him credit because the offense wasn't there at the time. And, you know, since that game, actually, the offense hasn't been really inconsistent. They have been games where they couldn't score at all, and today they've scored. And I had to see because of fatigue that has been hurting them, really, that they've just been tired. Like, they just feel like they needed those extra days off, and eventually the offense started kicking again. But it's going to determine this week with the Blue Jays. Are they ready to take that division, or are they just really just so tired right now that they just can't seem to get over the hump and offensively?
Yeah, Toronto, a big hitting team.
Yeah.
And now their pitching's picked up because they were giving up a lot of runs early on. They were surviving on their hitting. Now their pitching's getting in order. You're a big Yankee fan, Lasagne. Are you more concerned with the bullpen leading up to Miller? Or are you more concerned with the starting pitching?
I'm way more concerned with the starting.
I'm concerned with starting pitching.
Because the thing that the Yankees have done well is this. They have enough arms, unlike the Mets, they have enough arms to get them 6, 7, even 9 outs sometimes before they get to Miller.
Right.
And three of those outs go through somebody by the name of Deline Betances, who is
by and
far the best setup guy in all of baseball.
Right.
I mean, I have absolutely nothing to worry about when it comes to that bullpen.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that the playoff rotation consists of Nate Eovaldi, Luis Severino, CeCe Sabathia, any combination of those three names, it worries me a little bit.
Yeah, Sabathia is just, I'm done with Sabathia. He's just not the same pitcher anymore since that knee injury. And Nathan Eovaldi has been a very surprising pitcher, to be honest.
It's smoke and mirrors.
How does he
throw so hard and fail to miss bats? It's literally just like Kyle Farnsworth. It's straight heat. And I don't want to knock the man unnecessarily because he's been working with Larry Rothschild. He's gone from being a thrower to a pitcher. But it's nowhere near an ace-like performance. You know, it's a 13-2. It's an ace record, but he's very hittable.
Right.
He only gives you maybe 5-plus innings on the mound. And in the playoffs, yes, you can mix match all you want, but your starters are going to have to give you a little bit more.
Right. But do you see Tanaka being in there?
I mean, Tanaka's definitely in there.
Tanaka, I'm hoping for Severino, right?
Severino's, I think you have to put Severino.
And then Eovaldi, right? And most teams will go with 4 starters unless they're in a bind, like they're down 2 games to, you know.
Yeah.
They're down 3 games, you know, whatever it's going to be. They usually go with 4.
What's crazy to me, though, is I'm not so against having CeCe in the rotation. I'm really not too much against that.
He should be in the bullpen, to be honest, man.
Well,
I really believe he should be in the bullpen.
Well, we'll figure all that out now. But right now we have one of the legends in the industry on the phone right now. An MLB play-by-play voice on TV for more than 20 years, Mel Proctor joins us here on Sports Talk 1240. Mel, thanks so much for a moment of your time. How are you?
Hi, guys. My pleasure.
Mel, I know you're still around the game. Just give us a little bit your take on just the state of baseball this year between the Cardinals being far and away the best team in the league and the wild card just making all sorts of craziness happen in Major League Baseball.
Well, you know, it makes for excitement down the stretch when more than one team are in contention, and there's some great pennant races going on, so I think it's great for the game.
Now, Mel, the pretty much the main basis of this phone call is you have a new book that's out about manager Gene Mauch. I started reading it, and I really started to appreciate, you know, what goes behind somebody becoming a manager. Before Mauch passed back in 2005, how much did you interact with him when this book started coming into fruition?
book was written after he passed away. It really developed in 2002. I was between baseball jobs. I left the Padres and needed to find a job, so I took a job as a TV sportscaster in Palm Springs, California. It was a brand new CBS affiliate, and Gene lived there. And that year, 2002, the Angels were in the World Series against the Giants, and I knew Gene had managed the Angels, and so I managed to contact him. I didn't really know him. I'd met him once or twice years before, but I told him what I wanted, and I went over to his house, and we met and hit it off, and I explained to him that because we were a startup TV station, we had no advertising revenue, so we couldn't pay him anything to be an analyst on TV. But he said he'd do it if we'd get him a gross of his favorite golf balls. So I worked out a deal with a golf shop to get him the golf balls, and he came on with me before and after the World Series games. And even though he was in his 70s, he was brilliant. He was just amazing, and still followed the game closely. And he'd play golf every day, but he would videotape or record four games and then sit around at night having a cocktail or two and watch the games. And I did that with him a few times, and I was amazed by his knowledge and interest. So we became good friends. We stayed in touch, and I left to go first work for the Clippers, and then eventually to the Washington Nationals their first year. And I would stay in touch with Gene and call him up and tell him about the Nationals games and that kind of thing. And then, unfortunately, he developed lung cancer and passed away. But I found him to be such a fascinating guy. And so I just kind of was doing some research to find out more about him and realized the depth of this man. He was really incredible. He was a tough guy, but he was also a brilliant manager, and many of his peers felt that he was the smartest man ever in baseball. He'd also been involved in three of the biggest failures in baseball history, so that made him even more interesting. So that's how it came about, and I went around and interviewed his family members, his daughter and his sister, and many of his former teammates in the minor leagues and major leagues, and players who played for him. And it was fascinating to do all that and discover how many people just, you know, really loved this man. You know, a lot of people said if you played for Gene, you loved him. If you played against him, you hated him.
And Gene really was the big spark plug pretty much wherever he was. And nowadays, you don't see managers go out and really make a scene as much as Gene and some of his other contemporaries did. Can you give us an example of, I was detailing one of them when he was a player manager back when he's around 27 years old. What was your favorite interaction between Gene and umpires that you wrote about in your book?
Oh, boy. There were so many of them. He, as a minor league player, he was involved in a lot of fights with opposing players. With the umpires, he got into arguments with them, but because he knew the rule book better than they did, he was usually right. And he got thrown out of a lot of games because he argued. But I think the umpires really respected him, and they hated to see him come out of the dugout to argue because they knew more often than not, he was right about things.
Talking to Mel Proctor, former MLB TV play-by-play voice and also the author of the new book, The Little General, detailing the life and career of Gene Mauch. Those collapses that Gene Mauch was a part of really kind of put a stain on his legacy. How was it really talking with him, having him rehash that? Because he was very, very intense and very hard on himself when he looked back at his past mistakes. What were those conversations like?
Well, if I had known at that time that I was going to write a book about him, I certainly would ask him more in-depth questions. But he was a friend, so I didn't really hammer him with questions about the Phillies fold and what happened with the Angels and that type of thing. But, you know, I asked him one time, I said, how much do you miss baseball? Do you really miss it? And Gene always paused before he answered because he wanted to think of a good answer. And he paused and thought about it. And then he told me, he said, you know, I don't miss the travel. I don't miss being in hotels. I don't miss being away from home. But the 2.5, 3 hours in the dugout when I was mentally locked into a game. He said, I've never been able to replace that. I really miss it. But all of those defeats stayed with him. The collapse in Philadelphia in 64 when they were 6.5 games ahead with 12 games to go and lost 10 straight. And then in 82 with the Brewers when they were one out away from going to the World Series and Cecil Cooper got a big hit off of them. And then in 86 when Dave Henderson, Hendu, hit the home run to beat him and sent him down to loss against Boston Red Sox. That was probably the most crushing blow because he felt that 86 Angels team was really an exceptional club.
Mel, looking at particularly his time with the Expos, they were really an expansion franchise, and he was seen as one of those managers that would really sort of change the culture and sort of pave the way. Well, what can you tell us about his time up in Montreal?
Yeah, well, Jim Fanning was the general manager and had been a teammate of Gene's in the Pacific Coast League. And he told the owners in Montreal, he said, Gene is perfect for us. He's tough. He's a great instructor, teacher. He'll be great working with younger players. And because he had an encyclopedic knowledge of players, he and Fanning went to work trying to figure out who they should take in the player draft. And he said he was amazed that Mock never even had to look at any notes or everything. He had everything in his head. He had this photographic memory that he could recall players in the Pacific Coast League that he played against. And so he relied on Gene to draft the players that first year.
And indeed, it started out that very strong farm system that Montreal had back in the early 80s. We're talking to Ray Proctor, former TV voice, Mel Proctor, excuse me. Boy, what a long night. Mel Proctor, former MLB TV play-by-play voice. Do you see any real contemporaries that have really come up? I mean, I know that Gene Mauch was really one of a kind, but have you seen, I want to say, maybe flickers of Gene and other managers you've seen around the game?
Well, for one thing, 19 of Gene's former players wound up managing in the big leagues. So that says something about the baseball knowledge that he possessed and handed off to other people. Bob Boone was one of his great students, and he loves Gene. And Boone, of course, went on to manage Kansas City and Cincinnati. Tony La Russa was a big fan of Gene's and studied a lot of things he did. Today, you know, Gene is pretty well removed from the people who are managing, but so it's hard to really point to anybody and say, yeah, he's a disciple of Gene Mauch. But the fact that he developed 19 of his players who became managers is amazing. And I think Gene should really be in the Hall of Fame. He's 12th on the all-time win list with 1,904 victories. The players he's developed, the managers he developed, a lot of the things that are used in the game today were Gene Mauch inventions, like the double switch and these crazy defensive shifts that are being used now really were something that resulted from Gene and Earl Weaver, who had a chance to work with, plotting pitchers against hitters and how certain hitters did against pitchers. Gene, they did not really have computers then, but the computer was Gene's mind. He had all that stuff in his mind, and he was amazingly organized and could envision situations in games before they actually occurred, and they normally did as he had pictured them. It was just amazing.
Mel, along those lines, what has it been about Gene's overall body of work that's kept him out of the Hall of Fame? Is it just sort of a lack of recognition of his impact on the game, or is it other things?
I think it's because he's remembered for two, possibly three of the greatest collapses in Major League history, with the Phillies in 64, and as I mentioned, in 82 and 86 with the Angels. The fact that Donnie Moore, who gave up that home run to Dave Henderson, eventually committed suicide. There were other factors involved. He had a lot of problems, and that home run wasn't all of it, but it might have pushed him over the edge. So I think the fact that Gene is associated with those failures of certain teams maybe keeping him out of the Hall of Fame. But if you talk to baseball people who knew Gene and worked for him, they'll tell you this guy was a genius. Sparky Anderson said if he had the same talent that you had, you were never going to beat him. And that was true. I said La Russa loved him. You know, there were a lot of managers that were just amazed at the depth of his knowledge and dedication to the game. I mean, baseball was everything for him, aside from his family.
Mel, Derek Wasiak here. Now, I saw the end of his managing career. I was in high school when he was finishing up with the Angels, but he had those back-to-back 90-win seasons. And in 86, Mel, have you seen anything more exciting and just earth-shattering than those playoff series? Not only the ALCS, but even the NLCS, the Mets and the Astros, and then the World Series itself. I mean, that was probably, for a manager, that had to be one of the most stressful situations to go through in any postseason for all the managers included. Have you ever seen anything so just unreal? I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
No, in fact, that Game 5 of that series between the Red Sox and the Angels is the greatest game I've ever seen.
Right.
And Marcel Lachman, who was Gene's pitching coach, said the same thing. And he said Gene told him the same thing, saying this is the most exciting game I've ever been involved with. And for fans who might be listening, it's available in its entirety on YouTube. And I've watched that game several times, and I'm telling you, it's one of the greatest games you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that the Angels lost that game. I felt so bad for Donnie Moore later on when you saw things unfold in his personal life. But even that game in particular, and I was pulling for the Angels because I never liked the Red Sox anyway. But there is one other question I wanted to ask you, only because I saw it in something I was reading. I know they said a lot of teams he coached, he built on getting on base, moving station to station, but he did have a couple of the more dynamic personalities in terms of power hitters. He coached Dick Allen, right, with the Phillies, was it?
Yes.
And he coached Reggie Jackson a little. Did he ever tell you any stories? Like, I'm just curious as to who was the more powerful home run hitter in terms of distance. Did he ever talk about that with you?
Well, I think he regarded Reggie Allen as one of the great athletes of all time. This guy was incredible. Gene really gave him the chance because Allen had been in the minor leagues, had some exceptional years, but
right.
Gene brought him up and felt that he was such a great athlete. He led his high school team to state championships along with his brothers and an 82-game win streak, and Gene saw this guy with long arms, huge hands, tremendous strength, and felt that he could put him at third base because he needed a third baseman. So it was Gene who really took that chance. Allen obviously struggled defensively at first, but he hit and hit with power and hit some of the longest home runs ever. And if you talk to guys who played with Dick Allen, like Pat Corrales,
right,
who was his good friend, he'll tell you this guy should have been one of the greatest ever.
Right, and he had certain personal issues that might have derailed what he was going through in his career, right?
Yeah. You know, it was kind of a difficult time racially. There were some troubled times in
yep.
Philadelphia, and he had been, when he played in the minor leagues, you know, he'd had a tough time with some of the racial issues. And
right.
So that was a problem, and he resented authority. And it's interesting that when Gene passed away, Dick Allen, as he wanted to be called, and his mother came to the funeral and the ceremony, and his mom thanked Gene's daughter. She said, "I want to thank you for your father for helping make my son a man."
Right. And what better a compliment than that? The only other question I had, Mel, because I liked Richie Allen, or Dick Allen. I like to call him Dick Allen, too. And I saw him in an interview, and you talked about the racial tension that he went through. When you listen to him in an interview and how well spoken, he comes across as such a mild-mannered, soft-spoken guy. I mean, you'd never think that he had to go through some of the stuff like the story I heard with Frank Thomas, right? I mean, he just sounded like such a kind, gentle man.
Yeah, but he was a proud man.
Right.
And, you know, the fight with Frank Thomas was kind of a strange thing. They were standing around the batting cage getting ready for a game against Cincinnati, and as baseball players do, they were ribbing each other, and it became a little too serious for Richie Allen, and
right.
Supposedly he took a swing, and Frank Thomas retaliated. He happened to be holding a bat at the time and hit him in the shoulder.
Right.
I've talked to Bobby Wine and Pat Corrales, who were both right there at the time, and they said the thing has really been blown out of proportion. It was not this brawl or anything like it. It was a little incident that flared up. difficult situation because Thomas was white, Allen was black. Thomas had become very popular because when he was injured, he hosted co-hosted a radio show in the mornings, and people loved him. And Richie was regarded as this moody black man,
right,
despite his talent. So that became a very difficult situation, and they had to release Frank Thomas right after the game. And Gene Mock apparently told Allen, or told Thomas, that's what happens when the guy you get in a fight with is 23 years old, leading the league in hitting.
Right.
Mel, this is Raymond here on Sports Talk 1240. I want to ask you, we're in the present, I want to ask you more of Matt Harvey's situation. You know, he commented saying that, you know, there's a limit for him on 180 pitches. Do you believe that with all these pitchers now in this generation, now with these limits of them pitching not more than 180, you think it doesn't matter really because they're still going to get either hurt or their arm's going to go out? I mean, does it really matter like that back then in the day, or is it just different?
It's different. I think pitchers are pampered now, and these pitch counts have become ridiculous. And in interviewing some of the players I did for the book, Jim Bunning, averaged 40 starts a year. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to do that today. Guys were determined to pitch complete games. They didn't try to give a manager the best six innings and wait for the bullpen. I mean, it's all changed. I think it's a little ridiculous, to tell you the truth. Pitchers then threw a lot more. They ran a lot more than they do now. If somebody went back to the way things were done in the past and won a pennant, then everybody would be doing the same thing. But baseball was so into the sabermetrics and measuring everything, number of pitches and percentage of curveballs thrown by a pitcher and all of these things. I think it's gone to an extreme, and I don't think it's good for the game in the long run.
Mel Proctor, veteran sportscaster, not just in Major League Baseball, but also in basketball as well. One final question before we let you go. If there was a part of the book that you would tease right now for anyone who wants to go buy The Little General, it's out now and pretty great, by the way.
Thank you.
What's that real story that you would go for?
Oh, boy. There were so many of them. A particular funny story, because Rusty Staub and I have been good friends for 30-some years, Rusty was a favorite of Gene's, and Rusty had great respect for Gene. So Rusty was a young player with Houston, and when Gene was in Montreal, they traded for him. Well, I've had a few cocktails with Rusty, so I know that he's afraid of flying, and the only way he can fly is if he self-medicates before a game and takes a cab, from the clubhouse to the airport and pounds a few scotches or vodkas or whatever, and he's able to fly. But when he arrived in Montreal, Gene Mock had a rule that you couldn't drink on the bus going to the airport, and you couldn't drink on the flight. And the reason was because they were owned by the Bronfman family that were makers of scotch. And so there were some legal issues there. So he didn't allow his players to drink. But Rusty came in, and the first mistake he made was people called Gene Mock the Little General, but no one ever said it to his face. But
Rusty, that's great.
Rusty, just joining the team, said, "General," and before he could say anything more, Mock froze him with one of those icy stares and, enunciating each word, said, "Rusty, there's no R-A-L at the end of my name." And he said, "Oh, well, okay, Skipper, what's the fine for, if I drink?" And he said, "Well, it's going to be $100 every time." So Rusty said he went home, figured out there were 32 road trips times 100 is 3,200. So he wrote out a check to Gene Mock for 3,200.
That's great.
He came back and gave it to him, and Mock gave it right back and said, "Don't embarrass me, Rusty. Just do what you have to do." So after that, Rusty would fill a diet Pepsi can with crushed ice and vodka, fill two of them, as a matter of fact. He'd drink one on the bus and another on the plane, and, have a great flight.
There you go. So he improvised.
So needless to say, if Gene Mock can handle that, he could handle pretty much anything in baseball. Mel Proctor, legendary sportscaster, thank you so much for your time tonight. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend.
great guys, and thank you so much.
Not a problem.
Thank you, Mel. Enjoy it.
Mel Proctor joining us here on Sports Talk 1240. Well, 30 minutes left, so of course we have to talk about Matt Harvey, because of course we do. Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Taking you to the top of the hour to close out this week's edition of Sports Talk 1240 here on your AM dial at 1240 and all the time at sportstalk1240.com. Unqua Sonia, Raymond Moore, and Derek Wozniak. And well, fellas, it all comes down to this, the moment that Mets fans have all been waiting for. And I say that with all the sarcasm in the world, because I read the comments, I heard all the talk, and really my initial take from it is, so what? He's going to pitch. I don't care what anyone says. It's like Derek said before. It's not like the team's going to go out there and shut him down. They are trying to figure out, oh, what's the stress on his arm going to be? And I understand that you need to treat every single pitcher you have with care, particularly when they're younger. But this is a non-issue. Scott Boras opened his mouth because Scott Boras opens his mouth. It's what he does. He's been an agent for so long that the fact that this turned into a national story where Mets fans are going, oh, we don't need Harvey anyway, which is a lie, all of a sudden it's become this new rallying cry because the man is concerned about throwing 180 innings after Tommy John surgery. Hello? I don't blame him for wanting to take care of his arm. I will say he didn't handle it the best, and his timing in September with the team up by at least 5 games in the division and trying to get back to the postseason for the first time in nearly a decade, now might not have been the greatest time to have this discussion. But I'm sick and tired of hearing it. I'm sick and tired of the whining. Mets fans, he's going to pitch. It's really not that big a deal. You can pretty much win the division, grow up. It's really not that big a deal. It really isn't.
Well, you know, I heard an interesting comment on George Arroyo on the Yankees before the game saying about how you want to manage these pitchers pitching 180. And I thought he did a pretty good comment when he said, if you really want them to not pitch as much as he can, just let him pitch in April. Basically, not men pitch, but basically not. Shut them down for the month of April. That way you have to be worried so much in September and, you know, where they are right now in the Mets situation. And everybody's different because, you know, for the Mets, they're in a situation where they're in the playoff push right now. And, you know, they want to make the playoffs. They haven't been in the playoffs in a long time. And they just want Harvey to make sure he's healthy. And financially, I get it because if anything happens to him, then he's not going to get paid the money that he should be getting. And I think, to me, I think, especially in this type of league right now, all these pitchers, it's better if they just, you know, they're safe about it, get their money, and then from there we'll see what happens. Right. But everybody's different. Like, if it were me in a situation, I probably would have done the same thing as him, because I'm scared that if I get that injury again, that I won't get my money that I should be getting. So I think – I don't blame Harvey for saying that.
Well, while we've been doing the show, I just – you know, I browsed the internet a little bit, and they say on Yahoo Sports that he wrote an article for the Players Tribune telling fans that he will pitch in the playoffs. So now he's saying that they're coming up with a plan between – he's trying to get everybody on the same page, the organization, the doctors, and Boris, and they're trying to come up with a plan of what they'll do for the rest of the regular season. But he says, and this is supposed to be a quote for him, "I understand the risks involved, also fully aware of the opportunity the Mets have this postseason. Winning the division and getting to playoffs is our goal." He goes, "Once we're there, I will be there." So, in essence, that's what he's saying. That came out during our show. I don't know when, but it's on Yahoo Sports. If people want to check it out, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of articles tomorrow regarding it.
And speaking about it, Anthony from Queens joins us on Sports Talk 1240. Anthony, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah. I was going to talk about the Matt Harvey situation. I feel like a lot of people are over-exaggerating the situation. I feel like, you know, in the end of the day, 180 pitch limit is his decision. And I mean, even though he made the decision about pitching in the playoffs, I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, Harvey pitches his whole life. This is a little league, you know, to get to the spot where he is now. And I feel like, you know, if you get to know Tommy John surgery, that might be it for you.
Well, by the way, he's one of my closest friends here. He's a big-time Mets fan.
Okay.
And he knows, you know, pretty much I agree with him. What he says is his decision. You know, financially, it is what it is. He needs to first be financially stable before he makes that decision he wants to pitch over. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Anthony, I think we're losing you. You still there? Okay, you are still here. Good. Go ahead.
Oh, and I mean, yeah, obviously it's an agreeable decision. And you know, the way that I feel like Harvey's having the situation is good. But I feel like, all right, at the end of the day, the Mets fans should have panicked. Harvey knows what he's doing. Because on social media, there's a lot of fans criticizing Harvey's decision, following up on Instagram, Facebook, cursing him out. You know, at the end of the day, it's a pitcher trying to protect his career. Even if he stays with the Mets or not, he deserves to be left alone.
Anthony, thanks for the call, and I appreciate the fact that we do have people with their heads on straight regarding this entire situation. If you want to join the conversation, free to call in 631-888-8811.
All right, so
he agrees with you.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm not going to begrudge Harvey no matter what he does. It is his decision to make. I look at this as a whole in baseball. I'm just saying, if a guy has Tommy John surgery, you know, I've always understood it that the problem is some guys come back too soon. And Harvey didn't do that. He didn't come back at the end of last year. He waited, gave himself an entire offseason. And there were times during the season where he struggled.
Yeah.
But he is past that. So all I'm saying is he healthy today? I mean, he looks damn healthy to me. Now, what is going to be shutting him down? What is that going to do for him? Like, you shut him down, you know, you skip a start here or there, I understand that. But shutting him down, that's not going to ensure that he's not going to come back and start throwing in spring training and blow out his arm in an exhibition game or when the season starts. It's not going to ensure anything. So to me, and being a former athlete, you know, I was fortunate growing up to be a quick healer no matter what I had to deal with or being able to play through certain injuries, a fractured finger, whatever, when I was playing football. But when I was healed, when I was healthy, that was it. There was nothing taking me out, and I just don't see the logic in that here. I really just don't. I think the guy's healthy. He's pitching. If you want to skip a start here or there down the stretch, that's fine. But there is no way you're protecting somebody from ever getting injured again, no matter what. And I understand a pitcher. It's his arms. It's his, you know, it's his elbow and everything. But.
Well, it's like what Mel Proctor said. He said, you know, back then people used to pitch like 40 starts, and they're not doing that anymore right now. No. They used to go complete games. And before now, it's just like Everybody's about, you know, you got to pitch 7 to 8 innings, that's it, because you don't want to protect the pitcher. Like, even with Severino, you know, and Girardi told us before about the minor leagues, well, he's not going to say it, but he pitched pretty much like 5 or 4 innings because they know he was going to come up. They don't want him to work so hard in the minor leagues and then go up. So a lot of these managers are just being precaution with the pitchers right now.
Right. I mean, like, how many guys in the Mets rotation have had the surgery? You know, some guys have had it before they got to the majors. Didn't Mats have it? I mean,
I think Mats had it out of high school.
Right, before, I mean, you know, so, and even some, and I don't know the guy, if the guy has any injury history, but really, think about it logically, right? The guy's healthy, he's pitching. Take Jake Arrieta. He's never thrown more than 150 innings. He's up to 191. So, is that good for his elbow, that he's 40 innings over his career high? I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, but he's going to go well over 200, and he's going to go into the postseason with the Cubs, and he's going to pitch. So I just, you know, and I understand Dr. Andrews. He's a well-renowned doctor and all that, but I just, you're healed, and you're conditioning your arm. These guys have, they throw on certain off days to keep things going. I just, I'm the babying effect in sports, I don't necessarily agree with it wholeheartedly. That's all
I think. It's just habits and habits. It's the same thing with any injury, like even NFL with ACL injuries and NBA, same thing. It just happens. You can't stop it. It will happen or it will happen.
And in regards to figuring out, you know, how important it is when to shut someone down and when not someone shut someone down, we've got to recognize this. The window for the playoffs is never guaranteed. And we can go on about that all day. Meanwhile, we do have another caller. Richie from Queens is online. Richie, how are you?
Good. How are you guys? You guys are doing a great job. I love the conversation right now.
Appreciate it. Richie, what's on your mind?
Nothing much. I was just going to talk about the Matt Harvey situation.
Go ahead.
Guy is a baby. He's a crybaby. All right? You go in front of your manager and you tell him to say stuff about you. That's a crybaby type of thing. He's an adult. He should make decisions by himself. How dare he tell Scott Boras to speak for him? You know, that's disgusting. He's a grown man. He should know better. He's a baseball player. He has an innings limit, but you know what? This is a competitive level sport. He should be blessed to even play in the majors. You know, you should ask kids nowadays how hard it is to even make it there. You know, I just don't understand. You know, right now for every baseball player, money is more important than skills and the competition. I pity him, to be honest.
Now, Richie, that's why early in the show I brought up the fact and the question, would Matt Harvey be speaking like this along with his agent if he wasn't making $600,000 a year and he was already making $12 million a year? And I just have to be fair about it as a sports talk host. I just don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, you know what? Let me tell you something. When you're a baseball player, right, and you're going to make millions of dollars, he wanted to sue the Mets because he obviously had a conversation with his agent. You know, Scott Boras and him spoke because there is no reason why Scott Boras would come out and tell the media this. And even though he justified it by saying, oh, they asked me the question. But the truth is, even though they asked you the question does not mean you could justify the fact that you speak about your client in front of the media like that. This should have been kept private. This should have been between Sandy Alderson, should have been between Scott Boras and Matt Harvey. But this was released to the media because Matt Harvey wanted it that way.
I agree with that.
I don't disagree. I mean,
yeah, I agree with that.
We were talking about it a little bit earlier, how different, you know, these things today are. I would have much rather have had him handle it himself like you were talking about, Richie, and it didn't really need three tiers of people to say the same thing three different ways, but I just kind of feel like it's really not that big a deal.
Yeah, but you know what the funny part is? Yesterday he goes, okay, no comments to everything. Today he goes, of course I'm pitching in the postseason. I mean, somebody's filling his ear. Nobody changes their comments dramatically if it wasn't the case where they didn't want to say things that they wanted to say. You know what I'm saying? He's obviously having his ears filled by Mets management, by his agent, by his close friends. Everybody's telling him different things. He needs to make decisions for himself. That's all I'm saying, you know?
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that, too.
He's his own man. He's very mature for his age. He knows what's going on. And maybe that's why he came out now, and you're going to read about it tomorrow. And made this statement that he wrote an article for the Players Tribune,
right,
whatever that
exactly
is. So.
Yeah. Well, great job, guys. Good job. I'll be listening.
Richie, we appreciate you taking the call. Again, if you want to join us on the show, 631-888-8811. Boy, this Matt Harvey thing is really bringing out a lot of different viewpoints and a lot of different tensions. And I will still stick to my guns. It's really not that big a deal. But Richie brought up a pretty valid point. Who's running the show here?
Yep.
Because whew, I don't know whether I blame TV shows or just from reading too much about so many people being in one player's business, but I think that whenever you are a part of an endeavor and you're the focal point, in other words, the player versus an agent, GM, all that, you have a responsibility to yourself to be responsible for whatever it is put out about you and in your name. So Matt Harvey really should have had a handle on all of that. There's no reason for Scott Boras to run his mouth. We know Scott Boras runs his mouth, like we said before. It's what he does.
He's got a method.
Yeah, a method does. To get yeah. his guys paid. You as a player have to sometimes wrangle your agent and be like, listen, regarding A, B, C, and D, this does not get out. Because remember, you hired the agent.
That's right.
You have the opportunity to kind of pick and choose what information gets disseminated. So the fact that we spent this whole weekend talking about Matt Harvey's supposed innings limit, which really should have been in place back during spring training while the Mets are chasing down a playoff spot, it's mind-blowing to me.
It really is, but, you know, it's his decision, and, you know, I forgot what it is and everything, but, you know, the Mets are in a very good situation right now, and I know he wants to protect himself, but if this was like this, if the Mets were, like, not having a good season, it probably would have not been such a big deal. But now that they're having a great season, now they're going to get into the playoffs and everything, it's making a big deal out of it.
We're going to take it back just a few years to 2012. Where an upstart Washington Nationals team had by and large the best team in the league. Career years from Ryan Zimmerman, Bryce Harper was sort of getting his feet wet in the major leagues, and Jason Worth was actually earning that huge contract he signed to. And they had a budding rotation, including a one young arm by the name of Steven Strasburg. And then they mandated early that no matter what the playoff situation was, that they were going to pull him. I was always of the opinion that you don't want to take your best arm out. You don't want to shoot yourself in the foot before you have a chance to make that walk to get where you want to go. And the Nationals, even exported from the Expos, they hadn't really done much as a franchise. And whenever there's a window of opportunity, you owe it to yourself as an organization and also to your fans to do whatever you have to do. And I'm very surprised that with the coming back of Steven Strasburg that they didn't just skip starts in between. I'm surprised that they didn't really draw it out the same way they did with Matt Harvey and the other young arms in that Mets rotation.
Yeah.
And the comparison, it's somewhat loose, but it does play a factor here because Strasburg didn't pitch. Yes, his replacement won his start in the postseason, but they ended up losing that. I mean, Pete Cosma is still a curse word down in D.C. right now. But that he was the utility guy who got the hit for the Cardinals, by the way, in case right. that was lost
Do you
anybody.
Agree what Girardi said in, before the game today about pitchers like that saying that you should shut them down for in the month of April? That way you don't get into September and then all the situation right now.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong.
It's not a bad idea. If you think
you mean
about
don't
it.
Give him any starts in April.
And then bring him back in May or June or whatever. Yeah. That's not a bad idea. Because what sometimes we as baseball fans fail to realize is that this is a very long season. April, May, June, July, August, September. That's 6 months. And that's not even counting the postseason or spring training.
Right.
If you want to save an arm, kill a month.
Yeah.
And it's not like they won't have other arms to sort of fill that void. Because if you're talking about decreasing the workload, shortening the season is the perfect way to do it. And if the league won't do it, you can do it for them as well.
You know, even if you held him out for a month or into May, the guy still has to throw. I mean, look at what Nolan Ryan did with Texas a few years ago. And I actually liked what he did in terms of having his guys throw and build up their innings. And you're throwing all the time. When they come into spring training, it's about conditioning the arm and getting it going. The pitch, and I understand the logic in that. That's been going on for a long time. But once your arm is built up, it's about keeping it going and keeping things uniform. Because if you think you're going to rest something and you're going to let it go cold, then when you come back, forget it. It's like stretching cold muscles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Once they're into their routine, and that's what I'm saying. If the guy's back and he's healthy, then he's healthy. I'm telling you right now, I don't like the, and this goes on in all sports, like you said, football, you name it. You know, football, they don't even have 2-a-days really anymore. They're hardly in full pads. And I just think, and that sometimes is a problem with guys, if you're not used to getting hit, now all the focus, and I know the focus comes from medical doctors and the scrutiny with concussions, but a lot of times I think that a lot of guys have problems taking hits because they're not used to getting hit. They're not hitting and taking hits in practice.
And they're not using form tackling.
Yeah, and that's in football and in baseball. I think if you're going to think that you're going to, you know, diagram how I'm going to handle this pitcher, like a math equation, forget about it. If he's healthy, let him keep pitching. The idea of skipping a start, that's fine. The guy's still going to throw, you know, to keep things uniform for himself. You want to skip a start here, skip a start there. But once he's going, that is it. So if you do that down the stretch, and now the game Mets got a 4-game lead, and you got a few weeks left, you know, so be it. If you have to skip him a start, that's fine. But I don't like it. Didn't work with Strasburg. His career's never gotten back on track anyway. So now he missed the postseason, and his pitching has never been the same.
Yeah.
So what are you guaranteeing in life? Yeah, you know, is it his decision? Yeah, but that guy who, the last caller, you're speaking logically like you're related to Matt Harvey. The guy who called up, he's speaking like a diehard Met fan, and he's just speaking from the heart. I'm telling you, it's like Wilkerson with his hamstring, and he sat out every practice during camp. And I'm training for a marathon, right? I'm going to run the New York Marathon, first time ever. I know I'm not a professional athlete, right? But I did my 20-mile run a couple weeks ago, and like an hour after, I thought I hydrated afterwards. You know, my legs cramped up so bad. And all I could think about is, you know, I kind of stretched it out easy and walked it off, and that was fine. You know, after it took me about a good 10 minutes. And all I could think about was Wilkerson sitting out every goddamn practice. And I'm like, I'm not even missing a day of running. And that's where you get a lot of guys old school like me who think, hey, if you're healthy, you're healthy. Get in there and play. And that's why I was talking with my dad and my uncle today about records, and I'm like, well, no one's breaking Cal Ripken's record.
Yeah, no one's going to break that anytime soon.
No shot.
Guy's getting a day off. Guy's getting a bereavement leave. This leave, nobody's breaking that record. It's just a whole different culture.
Yeah.
In the unions and lawyers and agents, they ruin everything.
In all sports. I mean, you know, there's not that many old school guys anymore. Like, even in NBA, like, for instance, Kobe Bryant, even he played through so many injuries.
Yeah.
Same thing with Kevin Garnett. He played through so many injuries. They're not, in NBA, it's the same thing. There's not that many old school guys anymore. They just play through something. Now they just take a break, a game or two off, like you know, they want to recover the muscles and everything. It's not that many players anymore.
And we don't want to do away with the idea that certain types of leave are unacceptable. Like something like paternity leave or bereavement leave, I think that's one where you have to take it. Because if you have to handle stuff at home, even when it's during the middle of the season, I think the team should give you that couple of days or games or whatever to go home, take care of whatever you need to take care of with your family, and then come back to the field. But just taking a day off for the sake of taking a day off, that blows my mind.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, listen, I understand, you know, first child and all that. I'm not trying to be cold-hearted, all right? And bereavement leave, I understand all that. And I understand how the times change, that's fine. But like when Thurman Munson died, you know, they went to his funeral,
and then they played the game that night.
You know what I mean? So that's just how time changed. It's different. And there's a lot of babying going on in sports. And now you're dealing with all multi-million dollar athletes. Okay, now Harvey's not that yet, right? He should be already, but he's not. But I think that's where fans just get that distaste. Like, I got to get up and go to work. You better, because that's just the way fans are. They're almost entitled to feel that way because of, you know, the players control more than the owners nowadays. It's just the cycle of life and the way we've come along as a society. So I can't be displeased when a fan voices that kind of sentiment like him. That's fine.
Perspective is always important, though.
I have one last question for both of you, though. Because I was talking about that play with Mel Proctor. I was talking about that 1 year, particularly the playoffs. He's like, yeah, I've never seen anything like that. With the Mets, I know we focused on Harvey, but they were arguably one of the worst hitting teams for 4 months. This is why I would never give Kevin Long any credit. Someone mentioned the Yankees being a lousy hitting team last year, and I look at what the Mets did the first 4 months this year. You know, well, he worked with Grandison, fine. But have you ever seen a team? I mean, since the trade deadline, me and Enquad did a show. The Mets have been lights out pretty much since that show.
Yep.
Have you ever seen a team not hit at all for 4 months? And then since the trade deadline, everybody, you can't find a guy, 12, 13 guys, you can't find a guy in that lineup that hasn't done something. The 3 homer games, or Duda with 9 homers in 8 games, right? Or Grandison picked it up. Kadai came back, started hitting. Wright comes back, his first hits a homer. I mean, everybody in that lineup, Conforto. I mean, you go up and down the lineup. Darno, you name it. I've never, This is a totally different team, and that's why when Enqua tweets about the Mets and says, settle down, Met fans, right? Because everyone wants to wait for the, you know, catastrophe to strike.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I know they lost today, you know, but Gary Cohn cost them that game. She'd held on to that stat about a Met winning his first three starts as a major leaguer with the Mets. Did you see that stat that came up there?
Yeah.
He's as superstitious as anybody. He's a diehard Met fan, right, from the bleachers, right, with Howie Rose. Why are you even doing that? Why are you even going down the avenue of giving the team the kiss of death? It's a 3-2 game. Couldn't you hold that stat? No geek's going to look that up in time anyway, you know, and get on the FAN and talk about it before you. Like, couldn't he just wait? Like, am I wrong? Am I the only superstitious athlete in the world?
You might be the only superstitious sportscaster, though. I do not believe in the broadcaster's jinx.
Oh, my God.
I believe it sometimes. Nope. I believe it. They
absolutely
call it, like,
not.
Something
the game is decided between the lines, point blank, period. But unfortunately,
Gary Cohn spends his time trying to jinx the other pitcher when they have no hitters. He'll say, still no hits after five. He'll never do it for a Met pitcher, but he does it to the other team. He shouldn't have done that
today.
And that's when he got the win.
Certain people do it. I just choose not to.
All right, then.
We are. Oh, man. But what a show we had for the past 2 hours. Want to thank our guests for calling in. Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report. Mel Proctor, big-time sportscaster for back in the day. Be sure to join us every week, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on 1240 a.m. on your radio down all the time at sportstalk1240.com with Derek Wasiak. And Raymond Moore, I'm Unqua Sonier. Same time, same week. See you then.
Let's go, Jets!
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.